Eagle 98.1 Game Day is on the air.
Presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
It's time to talk LSU football on the flagship home of the Tigers. Call 225-499-9898. It's Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Now, here's Charles Hanegrip and Justin Vincent.
8-0 so close as the Tigers win it by a score of 23-20. Get to the second break of the season with a 8-0 record and setting up the mega matchup with Alabama in 2 weeks in Tuscaloosa with everything on the line. Good evening, everybody. I'm Charles Hanegraaff along with former LSU Tiger Justin Vincent. In the annals of LSU and Auburn, we have seen just a little bit of everything. And more than anything, what we've seen is two football teams that have an abundance of athletes that have passionate fan bases, and we have seen big boy football when these two teams play. A huge amount of big plays, a huge amount of emotion on both sides, and today was no exception. LSU early in the season, to this point in the season, has put up some really gaudy offensive numbers, and because of that, LSU came into this game a significant favorite. But those of us that have watched the LSU-Auburn series, and like my partner here who has played in the LSU-Auburn series, Auburn is never going to be an easy out or an easy game. And this game played out exactly that same way. Early on, it was some LSU miscues that allowed Auburn to take an early lead. A holding call on LSU's Kalevon Chasson, a pass interference on Patrick Queen, and a field goal that put Auburn up 3-0, and one of the few times that LSU has had their first drive go 3 and out, and then the opponent respond with a score. The rest of the first quarter was a litany of flags, a pass interference on Auburn, a false start on LSU, a play before Joe Burrow was sacked. This lasted till the beginning of the second quarter when the LSU offense finally got on track, and it was again one of those lightning fast drives where Joe Burrow went three times to Ja'Marr Chase and then finally to Terrace Marshall making his return for the touchdown that gave LSU a 7-3 lead going into the second quarter, going into the early parts of the second quarter. But Auburn would hang tough. After an intentional grounding kill their next drive, they were able to recover a fumbled punt. And this was one of the big, big plays of the first half because it set Auburn up on a short field. On a day when Bo Nix was struggling and they were without, for the most part, Booby Whitlow played a little bit today, but was mostly without that. The short field was a godsend, and from 22 yards out, they were able to run a throwback to the tight end to put him in a goal-to-go situation. On fourth and goal, they went for it. The Nix sneak put him up 10-7, 3 minutes to go to the half. Tigers went back to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He would be huge in this game. A couple of times to get him some breathing room on the next drive. Then another play to Terrace Marshall for a first down and a flag on Auburn for a face mask. Put the Tigers down at the 11-yard line. It took them two more downs to get down to the one, but it was fourth down at that point. They chose to kick the field goal, having missed on a fourth and one sneak earlier in the game. On a flanker screen earlier in the game. And that made it 10-10 going into the second half. LSU could not get it going on the first drive of the second half, and then one of the key plays of the entire ball game happened on the first play from scrimmage for Auburn. The big 70-yard run that honestly should have been a touchdown out in the open field, DJ Williams looked like he was taking it to the house. It was an over-pursuit by LSU, but Grant Delpit never quit on the play. I don't know if it was Delpit's angle or his presence down there or if Williams just lost us where he was at on the field, JV, but for whatever reason, he stepped out of bounds at the 9 unprovoked, okay? Delpit didn't hit him. He wasn't in front of him. He steps out of the 9-yard line. At that point, if he scores it 17-10 and all the momentum, I mean, it's not an insurmountable lead, of course, but all the momentum would have been over there on the Auburn side to open the second half with a 3 and out and a 79-yard touchdown run is what it would have been, and he stepped out of bounds. And the LSU defense holds there, and it's 3-7, and I thought that was as big a play as there is any in the game this afternoon.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I think just he might have felt Grant coming because he was, I think, between the numbers – and the sideline and literally went to the sideline.
Yeah, and I thought that he had clear sailing. I mean, it really did look like he was going to score and that Delpit was just going to trail him into the end zone, and it didn't happen. And it was 3 instead of 7, and it felt like so much more. Anyway, with the lead at 13-10, the teams traded possession, and then one of the tremendous individual efforts today on a day where he hit a lot of them, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, on a drive that started the Auburn 45-yard line, literally put LSU on his back. First down for 22 yards, second down for 12 yards, third down for 5 yards, fourth play, for 6 yards, and a touchdown that put LSU ahead 16-13. They missed the extra point on what looked like a bad hold. The Tigers would get the ball back later in the quarter, and another drive that had some big plays from not only Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but also from Joe Burrow to Justin Jefferson, and then the draw on 3rd down and 2 from the 7, where Burrow's got to wait. Justin, I thought this was a great read, and I thought it was a kind of a courageous is the word I'm going to use run by Burrow, because at the 7-yard line they go 5 wide. Auburn gives him a look that would suggest run, and he's got a hold for probably a 2 count there till the linebacker finally bails out. And with those guys from Auburn, with the pressure they had gotten today, and they got to him a number of times, he's got to wait. Trust his lineman to push him past, wait for that linebacker to bail, and then take off. And he executed it beautifully. The whole thing opened up, and LSU got their 2-score lead with that play.
Yeah, when you have ice water in your veins, man, that's what you do. You know, for somebody to take that shot he took on the sideline early on in the game and to hop back up like it was a regular old tackle, and then to go and perform the way he did and, you know, have the gall to stand back there and run it in like that, says a lot about Joe Burrow now.
13.5 minutes to go at that point, and LSU had a 2-score lead. And the way the Auburn offense had sputtered through the remainder of the third quarter, you felt like LSU might be able to get the ball back, punch in another score that would put this thing away. The 13 plays that Auburn ran after the 70-yard run netted a grand total of 5 yards. Mm-hmm. So the rest of the third quarter, the LSU defense really stepped up. But knowing the LSU-Auburn rivalry the way we do, we should have known that things were far from over. And in a back-and-forth affair where neither offense could really gain a lot of traction, Auburn found themselves in a desperate situation late in the game. You showing me the highlights there.
Yeah,
it's almost play. like I'm narrating.
I know, right?
Almost like I can, but they can't see. We're on radio, so I gotta keep talking here. A long pass from Bo Nix to Seth Williams, a 34-yarder on what should have been a play that you're not supposed to make that play. You gotta tip your hat to the two Auburn players there. Nix is no more than a foot and a half, maybe a foot away from going out of bounds. Williams has got to go up. He's well covered on the play. He is also within a foot of the sideline. But they made the big play, and they were able to punch a touchdown in, bring this thing down to a onside kick, which LSU recovered. Auburn got a hand in there. We saw earlier in the day the Kansas State-Oklahoma game where Oklahoma almost got the ball back, but there was an illegal touching half a yard to the stick. And in this case, Derek Dillon ends up making the recovery, and LSU is able to run the clock out. I said this during the scoreboard show. There are games that are just very, very hard to win. And LSU-Auburn, no matter who's won it, no matter what stadium they've played in, has always been a very, very hard game to win. And don't look at the point spread. Look at the margin of victory in this series. There have been a couple of blowouts, but not very many. Most of the games are just like this. And it comes down to who can make the biggest play. LSU dominated the yardstick, 508 to 287, but give Auburn credit for making some plays, an interception at the goal line, a goal line stance on a fourth down where they get chased just short of the goal line. And it came down to the one thing that we talked about in pregame, which is that if on the lines, maybe there's a little bit of an edge here, a little bit of an edge there, secondary, receivers, running backs, whatever, that the biggest difference between these two teams was the quarterbacks. LSU's got Joe Burrow, who is still a leader for the Heisman. Don't imagine he did anything to hurt himself today. No, there wasn't the big number of touchdown passes that he usually has. But all in all, it was a very solid day for him. And for Bo Nix, you take a couple of the big passes out. He was 15 of 35 overall. And there were a couple of, you know, there were a couple of throws where he kind of got bailed out a little bit. That was the difference. I think Bo Nix has got a great future. I think he's a talented kid. But right now, Burrow's a fifth-year senior, and he's a true freshman. And that was the difference, I thought, in the game today.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely tell. I mean, Bo has some intangibles that will allow him to be a great player down the road. You see him throw the ball away certain times. Not obviously the jump ball out of bounds, but, you know, throwing in the dirt when the screen passes when he knows it's covered. So, I mean, he does some things exceptionally well, and he can't do anything but go up from here, and it'll be – one of these battles, you know, for the next few years to watch this LSU and that young man go to work.
I hope it's a great game against Alabama. Yeah, we wish him nothing but the best. 499-9898 is the number to call. It is the Hooters hotline. Try Hooters' new game day specials, 10 boneless wings and a pitcher of beer for $19.99. We'll go to those phone calls when we come back. Eagle 98.1 game day.
Eagle 98.1 game day, presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
499-9898 is the number to call. The Hooters hotline. Try Hooters' new game day specials, 10 boneless wings and a pitcher of beer for only $19.99. We start off with Scott in Baton Rouge. Scott, welcome into the show.
Where are you going? 2 miles up.
Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, man, what's up?
Hey, go ahead.
Hey, guys, listen. I need y'all's opinion on this. Auburn defense, Alabama defense, who's the best? And Darrell Williams, Harvey Williams, who's more well endowed?
Yeah.
Think of on that.
All right, I'll answer the defensive question
first. You're supposed to.
Yeah, well, that's the only question I'm answering. The numbers would suggest that Auburn's defense has been much better. They gave up 319 yards going in, Alabama 321, so that's pretty close. The rush defense numbers is the one that jumps out at me. It's about 50 yards difference per game. And that may not sound like a lot, but yeah. The difference is that Auburn has played a much more difficult schedule.
No doubt.
Than Alabama.
No doubt about it.
Glenn's in New Mexico. Glenn, welcome into the show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Hey, a few things for you. In the first half, I don't know if just the way the game was going or was Auburn making an effort to take Jefferson out of the game. And secondly, the fourth down plays, I love the new LSU offense, but at that time, don't you think it's time to go back to old-time LSU, two tight ends, put a 230-pound Price in the backfield and just run them up the middle?
They
don't have two tight ends. There was a point where Davis Price made a mistake, and I'm trying to remember. I think it was a taunting call. It was an unsportsmanlike, and I couldn't see what happened after what they showed on TV. But when he went to the sideline, he got an earful from the sideline. So I think they were going to let him have a seat for a little bit. You were in the stadium, so you could see a little bit more of the combination of coverages. What were they doing with Jefferson?
It looked like they were playing like a man, like a soft man on the outside, but playing zone in the middle. But then they were passing it off really well, because I was sitting next to a good friend of mine, and I was kept saying, I said, where's the dig route? Where's the dig route? I haven't seen it yet. Where's the dig route? And finally it came, but that was just a lapse on their part, because they had been covering it and passing it off so well. So it was kind of, like I said, a soft man on the outside, but it seemed weird kind of in the middle. A lot of guys were, you know, one linebacker would run with the running back, and the other one would kind of pass him off. So I don't know. They had a little funky deal going away. They took it away. Obviously, kudos to them. They found a way to do that.
Billy's on the West Bank. Billy, welcome in the show.
Hey, Charlie, how you doing?
Good.
Good. My question is, the last 2 weeks now, the LSU offensive line has played – two really good defensive lines, in my opinion. And how far off are we really in recruiting an offensive line that can stand up to these defensive lines consistently? And the second question I have is, with Oklahoma losing today, I mean, nobody really wants to hear it, but how important is the Alabama game really from a win-loss standpoint as far as I mean, a one-loss LSU to Bama, and then sets up pretty nice. They get to sit at home, like Alabama got to sit at home, and still go to the playoff in the last couple of years.
Yeah. So all right, Billy, I think I got where you're going here. First of all, I thought the offensive line played, it was a little hot and cold today, but considering who they were playing against and they put up 500 yards of total offense, look, there were some plays that Auburn blew up on the inside. Those are really good defensive linemen.
Yeah.
Brown's going to be a top five pick in the draft. And Damian Lewis, who for 2 years, Justin, the only time we've ever called his name is to single him out for doing something good. Not his best day. Not his best day. On the other hand, at times people have questioned Austin Deculus, and even we have, that maybe he's a guard playing tackle. I thought he was phenomenal today because if you watched a lot of the plays that Clyde Edwards-Helaire broke, he broke them to the outside. He broke them off that right edge, and Deculus had moved his guy way off the mark. So I thought he was very good. Look, recruiting is going really well right now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
To the point we got to turn guys away.
Yeah, and you saw a guy like Eric Gilbert earlier in the week. I mean, I know he's a tight end, but recruiting is not something that I'm worried about in a negative way right now. So I think to answer your question, things are going really well in that place. The Oklahoma loss. What the Oklahoma loss does is it opens up the possibility that a one-loss SEC team can get in, because there was not before this a clear path for a one-loss SEC team to get in. If Ohio State, Clemson, and Oklahoma had all run the table, then those three were going to get in with the SEC champion, whoever that ended up being. What this does is this opens up the debate. If it were a one-loss LSU or Alabama or Georgia, which I can't really see because Georgia's going to have to win the conference. So anyway, you open up the debate. I'm of the opinion that strength of schedule matters, but it doesn't matter as much as a conference championship. Yeah. I could be wrong. Every committee's different. They may feel a little bit differently. We got a lot of football left to play. But it opens up the door, Justin, because I thought before this there was not a clear path for a second SEC team to get in. And now there is. There'll be a debate, if it comes to that, of potentially a one-loss Oregon, the Pac-12, a one-loss Oklahoma. By the way, Baylor's still unbeaten. I mean, nobody thinks that they're going to run out in the Big 12, but they are still unbeaten. If it does come down to a one-loss Big 12 champion in addition to Pac-12 champion, Clemson, Ohio State, the SEC champion, and then you've got an argument. You've got a basis now for an argument. Now this would have been a lot easier it will be a lot easier if Texas ends up getting to the SEC, or would have been easier if Texas had gotten to the Big 12 championship game and beaten Oklahoma in the rematch. But they lost today. So
yeah.
That forget that. So Oklahoma beats Baylor in the regular season. If those teams play again, Iowa State had a chance. They lost today. You get a two-loss Big 12 champion. Well, that's
going to happen.
That makes it easy, but you still got a ways to go there. It definitely opens a door. It definitely opens a door. Danny and Hammond is next. Danny, welcome into the show.
Hey, man, great show. I'm sorry. Tennessee, Alabama, the officiating was rotten. Today we had number 2 versus number 9. The officiating was rotten. Don't number 2 and number 9 deserve to have better officiating crews?
Which? Give me a call. Give me a call.
I thought Joe Burrow was targeted for one.
On the play on the sideline?
Yeah.
He wasn't. He wasn't. Okay. I'm sorry. I looked at it. He wasn't. In real time, I thought he was too. Mm-hmm. In a replay, it's a shoulder and a sternum. He doesn't lead with the crown of his helmet into Burrow's helmet. Look, it's a hard hit. I've seen less called, believe me, but in my opinion, it wasn't a penalty. But okay, what else?
I'm just the whole game, the huddling up, officials have bad games, football teams have bad games. It looked like the officials had a bad game.
They called 27 penalties for over 200 yards. I didn't want them involved anymore.
It took over the ball game. It really did. And
so you're saying there were too many. You're saying there were too many calls. Okay.
I'm saying it just took over the ball game. Whereas two teams didn't get to go out and play football.
Okay.
And that's what I saw from the stand.
And Danny, I understand your frustration because I felt that way too. More so with the NFL than the college game, but I have felt like there's times where it's like, you know, doggone it, just let them play a little bit. But what I can't stomach is one-sided officiating, where one thing is called one way and one thing is not called the other way. Okay, like every time Alabama takes the field, I just can't stomach it. Today you had a very aggressive crew. Okay, Auburn had 15 penalties called on them for 98 yards. LSU had 12 penalties called on them for 118 yards. I got friends texting me like a dummy. I left my phone on today, and by the time I got a chance to turn it off, the inbox is full. It's like, well, they're swallowing the whistle today. No, not really. 27 penalties worth. I didn't need them any more involved than they were today. I didn't see the egregious call against one team or the other. Okay. Yeah. I didn't see the early Doucette call. I didn't see the Jacob Hester call. I didn't see the Ronnie Prude call today. Did they call a lot? Yeah. Were they aggressive? Yeah. But by and large, the Stingley play. Did you get a chance to see the replay on the Stingley play? Did you watch it? Were you down on the field? The punt return.
Yeah. Okay. So
it's close.
Yeah. I think it wasn't enough. It wasn't close enough view for them to see if the knee was down or not. From the angle I had, it looked like his knee was down. But he was also coming up at the same time. So it was one of them things, you know, if you'd have called him down from the get-go, they wouldn't have ever said he wasn't.
Yes. And the fact that they call a fumble.
Yeah.
It was close. Okay. Yeah. I understand there's frustration whenever you see that many penalties called. And I don't watch the games. You don't watch the games to watch the officials. We don't. No. But today was, you know, look, the tensions were high.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You had two unsportsmanlike conduct calls on LSU in the first, 20 minutes of the game. And yeah, one of those times it was, there should have been a taunt on Auburn first.
Mm-hmm.
Got the guy retaliating. That's officiating 101. We know that's going to happen. So I can understand. It wasn't the cleanest game to watch played. High level athletes out there, but a lot of penalties. But because they didn't go one side or the other, I can live with how they officiated today's game. 499-9898 is the number to call. This is Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day, presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day continues. LSU wins it 23-20. Try Hooters' new Game Day specials, 10 boneless wings and a pitcher of beer for $19.99. Call us on the Hooters hotline, 499-9898 is the number. Kevin is in Ville Platte. Kevin, welcome into the show.
Charles, Justin, good evening to y'all.
Good evening.
Hey, two quick things, then I want y'all's opinion. I'm going to hang up and listen. To me, on offense and on defense, to me on offense, the most improved player up until this time is Austin Deculus. And on defense, I would go with Tyler Shelvin.
No argument.
Also,
especially on Shelvin.
To me, LSU took their foot off the gas too early in the fourth quarter. Just to settle, I'm not saying they settled for a 10-point lead, but, you know, to me it wasn't enough. If Auburn recovers the onside kick, you're looking at a tie game or maybe even them taking the lead. So I wanted y'all opinion on that. Thank you.
Okay, Kevin, thank you. I think it's a very good question because I think it's going to be the popular opinion that they took their foot off the gas too early. I don't, having looked at it a little bit closer, happen to agree. And here's why. I'm gonna read you a few of the plays that they ran and the time that they ran them. I think this was more of a lack of execution by LSU in the fourth quarter. Now, hear me out. All right. After they took the 23-13 lead, they got the ball back on a three and out. So they're starting this drive, JV, at their own 6-yard line. Okay. This is with a little under 11 minutes to go. They got a 2-score lead now. The first play they run out to shoot is Clyde for 26 yards. That gets him out to the 32-yard line. Well, if I ran it for 26 yards on first down, I got no problem with them giving it to Clyde again, which they did for a yard. Then they ran a pass play on second down and 9. Burrow completed to Justin Jefferson for 7 yards. They're going to play third down and 1. Clyde got stopped. on third down and one. They had run third down and one plays before. So, again, you come off a 26-yard run, so you run it again. They stop that one. You throw a pass on the second one. You get in the third and short. You want to try and run the football. That's not a bad play there. So I didn't think that was a terrible drive. They end up having to punt the football there. The next drive, they throw this is with 8 minutes to go. Again, same score. The first pass is a first down pass to Jamar Chase. It's incomplete. Then they ran Ty Davis Price for 6 yards on third down and four. They threw the ball, and that was incomplete. So you got two passes out of three with 8 minutes to go, and you didn't complete either one of them. By the time they got the ball back, it was 4.5 minutes to go. Same score. They're on the 4-yard line. Now, with a 2-score lead on the 4-yard line coming out, even with Joe Burrow, I don't want to put the ball in harm's way here.
Yeah.
I don't want to take a chance on a fluke. I want to run some clock here. I want to force Auburn to take some timeouts with 4.5 minutes to go. I mean, I'm just trying to get home at that point. They ran Clyde twice. Auburn call a timeout. They ran Burrow on third down. Auburn call a timeout. So that was the end of the Auburn timeouts. And they got to punt on the football back with 3.5 minutes to go. Now, the last drive, they just kind of ran it out. So the two drives that are in question, I thought, you know, you threw 4 incomplete passes. They were still trying to throw the football. It just didn't complete them. And you missed. So if you want to, we could quibble, I guess, a little bit about the third down and one. Maybe it was a long one,
yeah.
which it was almost two for Clyde there. So I didn't think so, but they didn't execute very well. Down the stretch with some of those pass plays. Might have looked a little bit different.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. Pronounce that for me then, Musso. I'm going to say Slab. Slab in Gulfport. Yeah, I don't think anybody's there.
Yeah,
let's see. Let's try Steven in Hundred Oaks. Steven, welcome into the show.
Good evening, Charlie and Justin. Great show.
Appreciate it.
I was in the stadium tonight. It was loud. I was wondering, how many distinct plays do you think the crowd noise affected the Auburn offense, you know, made a move or some serious miscommunication that you think really affected the game?
I think you could chalk the false starts up to that, because you've seen Bo Nix walk up to the line of scrimmage and he was changing the play. And
yeah, I don't have the number of false starts here in front of me. Stuck for a number, Steven, I would say 4 to 6 minimum. And that's of the plays that they got off. I'm with Justin. All of the ones where you had false starts,
yeah.
Probably.
Third down was loud, man.
Yeah, I might be underselling it at 4 to 6. It may have been way more than that.
Oh yeah.
They ran 69 plays tonight. So at 4 to 6, I'm probably underselling it a little bit. Crowd was good. Crowd was good today. Really good.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay,
thanks a lot. Dwayne in Baton Rouge is next. Dwayne, welcome into the show.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
So I just got two quick things here. I think Edwards-Helaire is a very underrated back in the SEC and is not getting enough credit for what he does and how he does it. And second, I'd like to get y'all guys' thoughts on some of the play calling. I know you guys already talked about how it kind of seemed like we took the foot off the gas, but it's more of how a 4th and 1, or maybe a little bit over 1, we go to a quarterback sneak rather than giving Allaire the ball again and with how good he was doing. And I just don't see 3 runs in a row and then a receiver screen on 4th and goal to be the correct play call. Just get your guys' thoughts on that.
Because it didn't work.
I'm at a point in my LSU football watching career right now, especially with this offense, the way it's going, I'm not questioning nada. Nothing.
Well, I wasn't wild about the fact they ran it right into the teeth of the defense 3 times in a row. I liked the receiver screen call if it comes on 2nd down.
Yeah.
I think you got a lot better chance. They ran the exact same play against Georgia Southern, except they ran it to the near side instead of the far side.
The inside guy, the backer, I think what gave him the look and made him throw it is because he could have handed it off. The backer was inside. He was inside the tackle. And literally, as soon as he snapped it, he bolted. And Joe already had made his mind that he was going to throw it.
Yeah.
And so there
they read it. Justin, is what.
Yeah.
If I read it, Musso read it. I mean, we're watching in the studio. It's here. They're about to throw the flanker screen.
Don't give Musso that much credit.
Well, I got to give him a little bit of credit because he caught. We're sitting here going, here comes the flanker screen. If we knew it, I'm quite certain that the guys on the other sideline.
Yeah,
I like the call on second down or even third down. I wasn't wild about it on fourth down. But I mean, we're nitpicking. Clyde Edwards-Helaire came into this game as the ninth leading rusher in the Southeastern Conference. I think he's had a really, really strong year. He's been overshadowed by the passing game.
Yeah.
So I think it's okay to call him underrated. Gary Danielson spent most of the day calling him underrated. I've heard Kirk Herbstreit on game day talk about how he is underrated.
Yeah.
And now we're getting calls about him being underrated. Yeah. So if you get enough attention of being underrated, then all of a sudden you are correctly rated.
No doubt. He's everything that we hoped he could be. I remember, I was on staff when we recruited him, and Clyde has just always been that low center of gravity bowling ball type, but make you miss in a phone booth type guy. And he showed some of that today, especially when he got one-on-one out there with that safety.
Yeah, those are big-time special plays. I'm looking – there's a pretty good chance he's going to be the SEC Player of the Week. Now, they're putting up stupid numbers in Tuscaloosa tonight against Arkansas, but I think they're going to get those guys out of the game. Like, Judy's got 103 yards and two touchdowns. That's good. But I think right now he's probably I'm trying to do a quick scan of the stat. I think he's probably the SEC Player of the Week right now, unless something stupid happens in the end of this Missouri-Kentucky game. I mean, right now, statistically, he looks like the SEC Player of the Week. So he's going to get some love.
Recognition. Get some love.
Yeah. 499-9898 is the number to call. This is Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day, presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
LSU wins at 23-20. 499-9898 is the number to call. The Hooters Hotline, try Hooters' new Game Day specials, 10 boneless wings and a pitcher of beer for $19.99. John is in Baton Rouge. John, welcome in the show.
Yes, sir. You looking for Jonathan?
Okay, go ahead, Jonathan.
Okay, listen, I got one question I want to answer, and then I want to make two statements. How is Dale Pitts?
We don't have a full. He came back out of the locker room. He was favoring it. We'll know more. We'll probably know more tomorrow. I mean, I don't think it's terrible, but I'm not gonna make a diagnosis from where I am. So we'll have to wait and see.
Okay, listen, I don't think that the running back is underrated. I think that he's playing on a team that you got a Heisman Trophy candidate on. That's probably the reason why we're not talking about it.
That's fair.
Go ahead.
No, that's fair. He's been overshadowed by the right. passing game. That's fair.
Right. Well, the Heisman Trophy candidate.
Sure.
Well, listen, and then another thing I think that was they officiated me. I think that on the pass coverage today, LSU got cheated out a lot of calls because those guys were holding and all on was a lot of pass interference going on, and I think that might have been probably the difference why LSU can score at least about another 14-21 points.
Yeah. All right, John. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I don't necessarily agree. I think we get into these deals where. We got HDTV. We got multiple camera angles. A lot of these cameras that we didn't even have before. One of our guys here, Joe Rod, who is runs everything in our IT department, was telling me about one of the spider cams that they used today on the broadcast, which they can't use very often for whatever reason. I'm not technically savvy enough, but they gave some angles that you don't ordinarily get on a regular broadcast, and these are the camera on the rope kind of deal. So we're seeing so many more angles. It's such a better high definition that we can call these games from our sofa, and we can call all of the ones that they miss. All I'm asking is that they don't make the egregious error, or they don't officiate this thing so one-sided. I can go home and I can screen capture 10 times that LSU was holding and didn't get caught, and I can do the same thing for Auburn. All I'm asking is that they do the best that they can and they don't make the call. You know, don't throw Devin White out of the game for shoving the quarterback, okay? That's where I kind of lose it. That's where you lose me, all right, when you're trying to over-officiate the game. They were active today. I understand that there was a lot of flags. It's 27 flags, man. I don't like watching games ordinarily with 27 flags, but if 12 of them were one side and 15 were on the other side, then I can make my peace with that. I didn't think the officiating decided the game today. I thought the home team had the better quarterback, and that's why they won. There's a lot of other things in play here, but at the end of the day, the home team had the much better quarterback, and that's why they won.
Correct. You don't ever want the calls to determine a game.
No, I don't want there to be a call on early Doucette that I thought decided that game, or Ronnie Prude that decided that game. And I'm quite certain that there's a call somewhere that LSU got. I remember Corey Webster tackled an Alabama player in the end zone in Tiger Stadium, didn't get called for it, and LSU won that game. And that would have been an Alabama touchdown. And Webster, who I loved, it was a great player here, got away with one that day. It's the last time LSU got away with a call against Alabama, but it happens, okay? Those type of calls are the ones I don't need you to miss, all right? But I didn't think that it rose to that tonight. Robert in Baton Rouge is next. Robert, welcome into the show.
Yeah, hey, Charlie. Look, we employ some LSU athletes in our company. And we asked guys that,
come on,
about LSU's offense.
Okay.
And he told us, he said, look, y'all hadn't seen one quarter of what LSU has.
All right, let me help you out, man, because you didn't have too many. But I think I know where you're going with this, is what's to come.
Oh, there's a whole lot more. Just like everything else, there's a whole lot more. There's a lot of things that...
Give me an idea.
I mean, there's a bunch of different... I'd say football in general, just to kind of water down a little bit. Football in general is a kind of a copycat deal.
Sure.
But what you can do is different sets and formations to confuse the hell out of people.
Okay.
And that's where it comes from, especially offensively. Defensively, I really don't know that much about. I know enough, you know, as far as the schematics and things, how they go. But offensively, you can dress that thing up and make it as sexy as possible, but you could be doing the same thing, but you're confusing the dog out of people.
Okay, now we've seen a different approach in the second month of the season than the first. And I'm trying to balance it with the fact that the teams that they played in the second month of the season
are
so much better than the teams they played in the first. But it did seem like Florida and Auburn had good enough defensive personnel up front to where they didn't feel like they needed to blitz. And Mississippi State felt like they were at such a disadvantage that they felt they had to blitz every chance they got.
Yeah, that's what it looked
like, every down. Okay, so give me what the better alternative is. And it's tough to do, I think, because in the last month of the season, you're going to play the number one team, or at least the team that's number one right now in Alabama. You're going to play two teams that are at a monstrous disadvantage talent-wise in Ole Miss and Arkansas. And then the A&M game is whatever. We'll deal with that when we get there. So schematically, I don't know that there's anything that Arkansas can do to beat LSU. I don't think there is. I don't think there's much they can do that Ole Miss can do. But Saban's got 2 weeks, okay, to figure out how he wants to attack this, and he's got a couple of blueprints. He may not have quite the defensive front that Auburn does or Florida does, but he's got
some good.
Lord knows he's got plenty of talent.
Oh, no doubt.
There,
so, it's good on good.
Yeah. So I don't know what he may throw at them, but I also know that Brady and Ensminger and Burrow have 2 weeks to come up with.
Well, I'll tell you what, he starts sending some people, he's going to have some trouble. He sent some people, he's going to have some trouble.
Well, the comparable defenses to Alabama's didn't.
Yeah.
And they made LSU earn it.
But they have to now. Because front seven isn't that front seven.
Auburn made LSU earn it. They you catch the ball, we're going to tackle you. Yeah. We're going to make you do this over and over again. Yeah. You're going to make a mistake in the red zone. And sure enough, they did. Look, Auburn's game plan was pretty doggone solid today.
Kevin Steele did a good job.
Kevin Steele did a good job. I thought that I thought that Gus did what he could.
Yeah.
He's trying to win a game on the road against the number two team in the country with a quarterback he knows can't complete 50% of his passes. That's a hard way to fly,
No doubt.
I mean, and they came within, you know, a couple of plays, and maybe they get one fluke, one good play, one bounce, one great play by one of their guys away from winning, stealing this thing.
Yeah.
I thought Auburn – look, man, I thought that coaching staff – you go back to Auburn, Alabama – They wouldn't say this publicly because it sounds like they're blaming it on the kids. But like, man, look, we did what we could.
And I just thought about it. I said to myself just now. I said Kevin Steele's name, but there's somebody else on that staff who was here back in the day that I don't really care for that much, and I'm glad they lost today. I just thought about
it. LSU to win.
I just really thought about it.
If you're asking. Has LSU shown everything on offense? No, I'm sure that there's some wrinkles that they will have that they think can work against Alabama and vice versa. Kevin is in Lafayette. Kevin, welcome into the show.
Hey, guys. I wanted to hear you grade on our special teams and see how you grade them out.
Well, okay, so you botched a snap.
The snap was low.
I'm sorry. The hold. I meant
to me, the snap was low, but the hold wasn't clean. Yeah. He got it up as quick as possible, and I think, and it kind of scared him a little bit.
All right, so we're going step by step here. They miss an extra point. That's bad. They fumble a punt. That's bad. Von Rosenberg punted six times tonight for a 38-yard average, and none of those went inside the 20. That's bad. Avery Atkins, who misses the end zone on his kickoffs once every other, Valentine's Day, put one into right at the goal line where the kickoff return was, I believe, 32 yards. That was at the end of the first half. And another one they returned for 27 yards and got a penalty for hitting a guy out of bounds. And God is my witness, JV, I thought when that official on that play pulled that pad out of his pocket and starts writing down this stuff, God is my witness, I thought they were going to throw Atkins out of the game for targeting.
Yeah.
And he was going to miss the first half of next week's of the Alabama game.
Hey,
I am sitting here. I am looking at Musa, and I'm like, they're going to throw him out the game. They're going to throw the kickoff specialist. They're going to throw him out the game. Watch what. And thankfully, it came down to just, regular personal fouls. So special teams today, I forgot the caller's name, D-minus, something like that. I mean, they had breakdowns in every single – The punting game was not good.
The punt return
game, big mistake there. You miss an extra point. Your kickoff specialist, who's been the very best in the country at doing that, allows a couple of returns and has a penalty. D-minus, if not an F today.
Listen, in Avery Atkins' defense, the kicker is a safety guy.
Right. I don't expect
I know,
him
I know,
to,
I know.
Okay,
I know,
go
no,
on,
I'm
go
just,
on.
No, I was just saying. No, yeah. He's a safety guy, so anything he's supposed to get to him. So if it's going to fall on anybody, it's going to be on the other guys.
Believe me, I love Avery Atkins, man. I watched 10 years worth of kickoffs where Les Miles asked him to put that thing 65 yards onto a postage stamp in a little, 4x4 box and watched him kick the ball out of bounds, okay? I love Avery Atkins.
Hold his hand up. You say, we're going to kick to the numbers. You know how hard that is?
Yes, I know, because I watched with the number of balls I watched go out of bounds, I know exactly how hard it is.
It's a toss-up. It's 50-50.
I mean, it was like he asked him to kick the ball 65 yards, 5 seconds in the air, and landed in a 5-gallon bucket down on the 3-yard line.
Running
good
full
luck
speed.
With that.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, it was like those small basketball goals at the county fair that you can't – the basketball's got about an inch worth of clearance to win the prize. No, I love Avery Atkins, but I was – sure as I could be, they were going to throw him out that game.
That place would have rioted.
Happened last year. 499-9898 is the number to call. LSU wins at 23-20. This is Eagle 98.1 game day.
Eagle 98.1 game day. Presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
Alabama's going final with Arkansas 48-7. Must have went running clock in the fourth quarter, huh? They started that game at 6 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock. They went final.
Dude.
You think they were ready to go home?
They ran giant power probably 27 times.
I mean, this is close to let's get the hell out of here as you can have in an SEC game. Notre Dame just scored. Michigan 17, Notre Dame 7 now. That's about 5.5 minutes to go in the third quarter.
Well, they're also not playing on CBS.
Helps. Don't get me started. Casey's in Youngsville. Casey, welcome into the show.
Good evening, gentlemen. JV, Charlie, hope you all having a great night.
We are.
Great night. Thank you for always doing this post-game show, man. I listen every chance I get.
Thanks.
JV, what's up, buddy?
What's happening, man?
Hey, I got two questions for JV. No disrespect to Charlie, but these two are for JV.
Why you think I got him here?
Take some of the heat off him.
Exactly. First one's up. JV, in this day and age of LSU football and SEC and Division I Top 25, what does the recruiting versus the practice schedule look like on a bye week like this heading into Bama? Who's hitting the road? Who's staying behind and practicing with the players? And what days are on and off? Like, what kind of a schedule are we looking at the next 2 weeks?
Well, it's changed so much, so you got to look at it like this. So Coach O will go out on the road tomorrow and probably maybe two or three other staff members. They won't do anything. I mean, not tomorrow, Monday. Sorry. They won't do anything on Monday. They'll watch film. Tuesday, he'll be back. They'll run practice. They may miss, you know, a couple coaches out there, but they'll switch off on and off. They'll take turns. And then come Friday, it'll be the last practice. Last practice probably will be Thursday. Last practice Thursday, everybody's gone. They're all on the road watching games somewhere.
Copy that. All right. And then the second question, what's the guard you got on tap for tonight, bud?
Ooh, the new Oscar Superfly.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to be smoking tonight. Go check out my man in Havana Port, and he'll hook you up.
All right.
Luis.
Good to know. Jason is in Clinton. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, man.
Hey, Jason.
Well, you know what? I was sitting there eating a moufalade that my wife made for me, and, you know, she's not an Italian person, but still, she was able to pull this off. And what I want to tell you is something that I know you've been knowing for a long time. What's going on with this whole series of judgment calls for the referees? We are just constantly went to more and more judgment calls for the referees, obviously giving them more control, which obviously means Vegas makes more money. And you and I both know that's happening today in all the sports, especially the NFL. How are we going to pull off to stop this? So we can get back to the game.
Well, I don't think Vegas has got anything to do with it, Jason. I appreciate the call. Vegas is going to make their money no matter who's officiating the game, no matter who's playing. So I don't think that's got anything to do with it. I do think we've gotten to a point now where we're going frame by frame on every call.
Yeah.
And that's what drives me nuts, that we
takes
are
the game long.
Yeah, that we are watching what seem to be very obvious plays. And the whole, you remember when it replay first came about?
Yep.
It was put in place to stop completely egregious errors, obvious errors. You know, the back to the not just games like the Saints and the Rams in the NFC Championship game. That's obvious. You know, I can remember a play in the AFC Championship game where Mike Renfro for the Oilers caught a ball against the Steelers that he was clearly in bounds. And, you know, that's going on 40 years ago. It was never intended to go – the Stingley play is a good example, okay? Stingley catches the ball. He's got a knee on the ground. But does he really have possession while the knee is on the ground, or does he not get possession until he's coming back up? The difference there is maybe an inch and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, we're sitting here with
a blade of grass.
Yes. We are trying to determine whether Stingley has lifted his knee off the ground till before or after he has completely secured the ball. We've got multiple angles on this. We've got the super slow-mo. We've got all this stuff. And I hear all the time, we got the technology, you should get it right. Okay. I understand that thinking, but they're out there for over 4 hours tonight. Okay. I'm okay with there being an inch worth of mistake, even if it goes against my team. If they'd have said, I watched the Stingley play in full speed, so did you. Did you think he fumbled watching it in full speed? Did you think he fumbled?
I did.
I did too.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm willing to live with that if they had gone back and looked at it and said, you know what? He had, you know, a blade of grass touching the bottom pad on the bottom of his knee, and, you know, it should have been the other way. I'm willing to let a few of those go without doing this Zapruder film frame by frame in high definition and zooming in. I don't want that 30 times a game. I really don't.
No, because 3 hours goes to five.
Okay. And so what they've tried to do is fix in the NFL is a reactionary thing. The officials blew the call. And so now they want to talk about, well, we should review pass interference. And how many pass interference penalties have been overturned in the last 5 weeks? I think it's one.
Yeah.
It was one out of 25 the last time I checked. So at what point do we, you know, we reach a point of diminishing returns with how long this is taking and what it's doing to the flow of the game versus getting every single call within the letter of the law. Is that what we want?
No, but I'm going to tell you what. For me personally, like ever since the whole thing with Tim Donaghy and basketball, I don't trust none of them. I'm just be honest with
okay.
you. And that's just me. I don't trust not nary referee, not one. From what I watched in high school football a couple weeks ago in St. Thomas More, to what I watched the NFL last year with the Rams and the Saints, to what I've seen throughout this college football year, it's some of the stuff is just asinine. It's some of the stuff that they're doing.
I agree.
It's crazy.
And it was so bad in the SEC last week in two games that did not involve LSU.
Yeah.
The commissioner felt compelled to write a dissertation on the website about what they're doing to promote transparency and regulate and grade their officials. And you still had the fans of South Carolina throwing garbage on the field.
Yeah.
And you still had Tennessee have a drive stopped for I'm not sure what.
I'm telling you, that holding call against South Carolina versus Alabama with the fake punt that they went into the end zone, that holding call was just like, dude, come on.
It wouldn't have been nearly as bad if they wouldn't have had the exact same play happen for Alabama
yeah.
two possessions later.
Exactly.
And they don't call it. See, that's where I lose it, okay?
And that's what I'm talking
when
about.
When they stopped the play for Tennessee because, well, they never gave a reason, okay? Now, they're trying – no, they –
that's what he did. But that's what he did, though.
Well, he did that after
the
they
clock.
Stopped it.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have had to reset the clock if they wouldn't have stopped the play. And now, so Pruitt is going nuts on the sideline because they've got a special formation, and now
they're
Alabama's
going fastball.
Got it. And what's the common denominator on all of these calls? They all involve Alabama, okay? You know, Moscona calls me. He says I'm crazy. I got the conspiracy theory. I got the tinfoil hat on. But believe me, I've seen it too many times. But in general, I don't really want to watch games that are stopped every second play to go frame by frame.
No.
Okay? I'm really
taking
not,
away from the game.
I'm really not wild about watching a game with 27 penalties like today, but at least it was, I felt like the game was officiated on both sides. Okay. Did they miss a couple? Yeah, they probably did. Danielle in Baton Rouge. Danielle, welcome into the show.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to thank y'all for speaking the truth about Alabama, first of all.
no problem.
I watched that Tennessee-Alabama game, and when they were in the red zone, that was egregious, and they called for Alabama all the time. But my two questions for you are, do y'all think Joe Burrow is NFL material, and should I go ahead and buy my tickets to the national championship game?
Ah, national championship game right down the road in New Orleans.
Hey, listen. That's a tough one for me because anybody who knows me knows I'm all about speaking things into existence. I'm about that. That's how I live my life.
Superstitious much?
Not really at all, but I'm all about speaking things into existence. You got to like believe it yourself before you think, you know, things are going to happen.
I'm listening.
So,
all right.
But definitely Joe Burrow's 100% NFL material. Some of the throws that he's making, you know, the way he carries himself, you know, the way he came into this, you know, unknown situation, earn the respect of these young men, that's all goes into account. Like, whenever the scouts come in, they don't talk to any of the coaches at all. They talk to Jack, Shelley, Tommy, Greg, Walt at the academic center, Big Ken. That's who they talk to because they know how to grade film, and they love him, especially the two dudes that I spoke to today on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
So, That's not even a question. He's going to have the opportunity to play on Sundays, and I think he's going to go on the first day early.
Not only is he – we did a little deep dive on this a couple of weeks ago about how much Burrow has actually made for himself in the last 2 months. Okay.
Can I guess?
Well, yeah. Okay. Just give me your best.
I'm going to say since the start of the season up until now, I'm going to say Joe has went from a priority free agent because he didn't have anything at Ohio State.
Okay.
To a mid-round type guy to a first-day guy. And now, in my opinion, top 10.
Yeah. Okay. There is some subjectivity here as to where his stock was before the season.
Yeah. I'm going to say he didn't have none.
Oh, okay. Well, then he's made a lot more in your mind. I thought that Burrow, if you had asked me in August, I would have said he's probably going to be a middle-of-the-third-day pick, probably a fifth or sixth round pick. Okay, that was just best guess, and it wouldn't have shocked me if he would have gone a little bit higher, a little bit lower than that. So let's just say the first pick of the sixth round, okay? And then I'm going to go from there. The guaranteed money for the first pick of the sixth round last year was $200,000, a little over $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be wildly optimistic, I don't think you could have found anybody that would have said Burrow was going before the fourth round. So let's start there. The first pick in the fourth round had a guaranteed money of $800,000. And that's where we kind of stopped because those are the guys that can still get cut.
Yep.
Okay, so we're just talking about straight signing bonus there. If you're in the first 2 days, you're going to make the team.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's going to be some salary there. So let's say the first pick of the fourth round, $800,000. And if you make the team, a four-year deal, it's worth $3.3 million.
Yep.
That's last year. Last year, now let's move him into the first round. And I think as recently as maybe 3 weeks ago, it was thought, he's probably the third quarterback that's going to come off the board behind Tua and Herbert. The last year, the third quarterback to come off the board was Dwayne Haskins for Washington at Ohio State, who was the guy that beat him out and conveniently went almost dead center of the first round at number 15, guaranteed money of $8.5 million and a contract of $14 million and change. And we have to take that into consideration because you're not cutting first-round picks. Fourth-round picks get cut. Not a lot, but
third-round picks get cut.
It's rare, but it happens, okay? First-round picks don't get cut. You're going to stick on the team. Even if you're terrible, you're going to stick on the team. So let's say that he's going to collect the entire contract, $14.4 million. So you went from $800,000 to $14.4 million. Now, what's in question now is not whether he's going to be picked or either whether he's going to be picked in the first round, but is he going to be the number one pick overall? Last year, the number one pick in the draft was Kyler Murray. His signing bonus was $23.5 million, mm-hmm. and the total value of his contract was $35 million.
Beep, beep. Okay. That's the backing up of Brinks truck right there, Big Daddy.
So if he's the number one pick in the draft, and that's starting to gain some traction here, we're talking about a difference of August 20th to, what's today, the 26th, a little over 2 months. We're talking about a difference in value of potentially a little over $34 million.
Smoking Joe.
Having a good year, my friend.
Oh, my goodness.
Having a good
year. A great year. A great year.
Even if we're wrong by 20 picks, it's still.
Oh, I mean, you got to look at it like this. The reason why I said what I said is because he had no stock. He wasn't playing.
I think he had a little bit of stock, Justin. I think that if he had had roughly the same year that he had last year, this year, I think he would have gone somewhere around where Danny Etling went, which was the seventh round, maybe a round before that. He's a little bit better athlete than Etling.
Yeah.
I think he's a little bit more accurate than Etling. If Etling went in the seventh round, I think if Joe Burrow had had the exact same stats last year, if they'd have rolled the same offense out, they'd have gone 10-3 again and gone to the whatever bowl, he would have probably been a fifth or sixth round pick,
just to
guess. 499-9898 is the number to call. Who's next? John in Covington is next. John, welcome into the show.
Yeah, hey, guys. Thank you. Great job you're doing. Great game just leaving a little while ago. So
Hey, Justin, how you doing?
Good, how you
doing? I know you from a different world on the medical side, but Charlie, I disagree with you about these referees. You know, when you were talking about 3 hours, you know, hey, if they did this, they messed a call. Look, I was in the medical world for over 20 years in ICU. You know, I don't want to hear the whining about three hours and you miss a call. You know, we're in there for 12 to 16 hours. If I mess up one time, somebody dies. So I don't want to hear that about a referee.
John, if they mess up, nobody dies. Okay, you got a much more important job than they do. I mean, come on. You're not really comparing a football game to a patient dying. Please. I mean, we all think football's important, but come on, man.
I'm not, but we're talking about national championship. You talk about people with millions of dollars. You guys make a living doing this. So, look, don't sit here and have your show about people that, you know, do this and do that. You make a living doing this.
Just like we do.
So take it seriously. If you're going to take it seriously, hold these guys accountable.
All right.
That's all that I have to say. You make a living doing it, hold them accountable.
And we do hold them accountable. I mean, how many shows – I've done this show for 20 years now, okay? And believe me, I've lost track of how many times we sat in here and ran rampshot over the officiating, okay?
Oh, yeah.
All I'm saying is I really – if we got to go frame by frame on 80% of the calls, 60% of the calls, I think the game loses something, okay? If I thought the integrity of the game was being compromised, I would say so. If there were 27 penalties called tonight and 24 of them were called on one team, I'd say, you know what, this is not right.
No doubt.
Okay, if there was a call like some of the ones we talked about that, you know, dramatically changed the game in one play, one fell swoop, I would say so. I really didn't have a problem with the way the game was officiated today.
No,
and I may be in a minority here. I'm starting to believe that I am, but. That's the way that
the thing that makes it worse, though, obviously them doing the frame by frame stuff, but it's also the CBS stuff that makes it even longer.
Now CBS and the way that they broadcast the game is an entirely different thing. Okay,
yeah.
I'm thinking about we got our IT guys here. Can we institute a clock somewhere in the building that has a countdown to 2024 when CBS loses this contract? Because I would like to put that in there, because I would like to be able to look forward to a day when somebody else, anybody else, is broadcasting these games. And it ain't about Danielson and Nestler. I don't have a problem with either one of them. I know a lot of people don't like, you know, the United. Look, turn the sound off, okay? But the actual format and the operation of how they broadcast the game, just the SEC game. You turn on the NFL on Sunday, they're fine, okay? Just this game, they absolutely kill it, okay? And they have killed it for years. And not for nothing, but their contract with the SEC is one of the most undervalued contracts in all of sports. I mean, they are getting the return on investment that CBS is getting for the game of the week is the best deal going in sports right now. So I can't wait for this thing to be up for an open bid where the league can finally say, you know what? You guys are killing the atmosphere on these things. You're killing the flow of these games.
Literally every commercial.
You are. Look, we all got to make a living. We all got to have commercials. I got no problem. I'm in that business too. Okay.
Yeah, but not all of them.
I had to give up my job in the ICU. I do this now. Okay. But my goodness, the execution of what they do is hideous. Hideous. 499-9898 is the number to call. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day, presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
LSU wins at 23-20 tonight. Go to 8-0 on the season. Kevin is in Baton Rouge. Kevin, welcome into the show.
Hey, gentlemen. Evening.
Evening.
I'm just getting a chance to listen, so you may have answered. I have a two-part question. You may have answered this first part already, but I understand Auburn's defense is some one of the best in the nation. Pretty impressive. But the offensive game plan tonight didn't resemble anything that got us to 7-0. So I want to know what was it specifically about this team, Auburn team, in defense that made us change up our game plan so much. And the other question is, on the last drive and going into halftime, We started from within the five, and the first two plays were like passes, and we got out of balance on both plays. Like a minute 50 left or so, but the clock never stopped on either play. I don't know if you noticed that, but I was wondering if y'all noticed that and why did the clock not stop.
You talking about Auburn on the last drive?
No, it was LSU. The LSU's drive in the second quarter, I think. I just know we got out of bounds twice, and the clock never stopped on that. And it was about a minute 50 left in before halftime.
I'm gonna have to go back and look at that one. I don't remember exactly. The last pass was to Moss. They got him down to fourth and one before they kicked the field goal. They got a first down on the pass before the pass they completed before that to Marshall. They got him a first down. That was the one with the face mask. I got to go back and look at the tape because I honestly don't remember that one. But Kevin, I can answer the rest of that. So I appreciate you calling. The game plan. Boy, this is going to go over like a. Like a fart in church, but it really wasn't all that much different than what they've done. Here's where they 508 yards of total offense on 88 plays, and you had 42 passes and 46 runs, and a lot of those, you know, you hit about eight or ten runs when the very last drive or two drives, I would say, of this. Here's the difference. You got 23 points tonight because you failed on fourth and goal from the one, because you threw an interception at the one, and because you got down to the one and kicked a field goal. That's three drives, okay?
Yeah.
That's three possessions. I guess you couldn't say the interception was a possession at the one-yard line, but the ball was at the one-yard line. That's three times that you got to the one-yard line, or the ball was at the one-yard line during your possession, and you got 3 points. That's essentially the difference tonight, because I'm here to tell you that 508 yards of total offense against an Auburn unit that was averaging, giving up 290 and twice as much on the ground as what they usually give up, it fits into the deal. You had some very bad special teams plays tonight. You had a fumble on a punt that cost you a score. You had a missed extra point. I mean, they left a lot of stuff out there. You had almost twice as many first downs. You know, Bob, you missed that by two. You outgained them 508 to 287. You left some points out there.
What was the time of possession?
It wasn't as bad as I thought. It was 33 to 27,
okay.
Roughly 33 in favor of LSU. So the execution of it wasn't as sharp in the red zone. And that's worth talking about, okay, because last week it was a problem too. Last week they went in three times at the beginning of the game and got field goals three times. Tonight you were – fourth and goal at the one, you missed. Fourth and goal at the one, you kicked the field goal, okay? That'll get you beat in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, no,
that's absolutely worth talking about, but I don't know that it was the play calls as much as the play execution of it. So I know what it looks like. I know if you watch the game once and you look at it, it's 23-20. They took their foot off the gas, they didn't call it. I don't see it. I see some bad execution down in the red zone, and I see some bad execution on special teams that kept this thing maybe a little bit closer than it needed to be. And yeah, that's a little bit frustrating.
Yeah.
But you know what ain't? Ain't no.
No
ain't
question.
No's not frustrating at all.
No question.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day Stat Check. Presented by Cox Business. Cox Business has fast, reliable internet that's backed by the 24/7 support of Perfect Plan Identifiers, expert listeners, and flexible installers. Expect more. Switch today at coxbusiness.com.
This might give you a little bit better perspective on why LSU, I think, maybe could have, should have, whatever. But they were in a little bit better shape than maybe the score would indicate. 30 first downs to 16. Net yards rushing, 187 to 130. Now, that's not a huge differential, but Auburn was giving up about half of that coming into the game. 508 total yards for LSU on 88 plays, a 5.8-yard average. 287 for Auburn, 69 plays, a 4.2-yard average. LSU lost the one fumble. We talked about that. Third down conversions, LSU was 9 of 19. Auburn was only 5 of 18. Possession time, 33:02 to 26:58. The penalties was another thing. All right. Regardless of the fact that they called 15 penalties on Auburn for 98 yards, 12 penalties for 118 yards is too much. It doesn't matter what the other side is. 12 penalties for 118 yards is too much. And I think the ones that they will harp on the most, Justin, you've been in these film rooms, they're going to jump Derek Dillon for, you know, letting his emotions get the best of him. And they're going to jump Ty Davis-Price for the same reason. That's 30 of the 118 yards for things that are very – look, you get a pass interference, you get a pass interference. You got to hold Derek Brown, you got to hold Derek Brown to keep him from killing your quarterback. But the other stuff is avoidable, and I think that's probably where they'll, you know, put the magnifying glass on. Rushing yards tonight, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 26 carries, 136 yards, and a touchdown. Joe Burrow, 13 carries. That is included with three sacks, so 31 yards and a touchdown. Ty Davis-Price, 4 carries for 22 yards. DJ Williams for Auburn, 13 carries, 130 yards. Did not score a touchdown, and that was so significant, that play. Just can't tell you how big I think that play was, that he did not score that touchdown to make it 17-10 and stepped out of bounds at the 9-yard line after that 70-yard run. Joe Burrow, 32 of 42, 321 yards, a touchdown, an interception. He was sacked three times. This is not going to – this is going to neither hurt nor be the number one line on his Heisman Trophy candidacy. He's fine there. He'll still be your leader next week. Bo Nix, 15 of 35, 157 yards, a touchdown, a pick. He was sacked three times. Ja'Marr Chase, 8 catches, 123 yards. Justin Jefferson, 7 catches for 60 yards. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 7 catches for 51 yards. Thaddeus Moss, 7 catches for 45 yards. Four guys caught at least 7 balls tonight for LSU. Seth Williams, 4 catches for 65 yards and a touchdown for Auburn. The punting was not good tonight for LSU. Von Rosenberg, 6 punts for 38-yard average, 38.2. None of those punts went inside the 20-yard line. And for Auburn, 10 punts, an average of 46.2. This is actually hidden yardage. We probably should have brought this up earlier, JV. That's 8 yards a punt times 10 punts for Auburn. You know, that's another score almost when you talk about hidden yardage. And the return yardage for Auburn, they had 59 yards in kickoff returns. LSU had none. And the punt returns pretty much canceled each other out, but LSU had the fumble. Tackles tonight. Auburn led by Jeremiah Denson, number 20, had 15 tackles tonight, 6 solos and 9 assists. Daniel Thomas, number 24, added a dozen for LSU. Jacoby Stevens, 10 tackles tonight. Phillips and Queen each had 7. LSU had 3 sacks tonight, one by Phillips, one by Divinity, one by Damone Clark, and 4 tackles for losses for LSU compared to 6 for Auburn. And that is your stat check. We'll take a break, come back, our final scoreboard, Eagle 98.1 game day.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day. The Snap Fitness College Football Scoreboard. Get fitter faster with Snap Fitness. Visit snapfitness.com or a location near you.
Just hang with me here. This is the most Les Miles ending ever. It's just so appropriate that this happens on the day LSU Auburn, okay? So just hang with me. I'm going to give you the scores in progress first. Number 19, Michigan, has just added another touchdown. They are really demolishing Notre Dame tonight, 31-7 in the rain up in Ann Arbor, about 11 and a half minutes to go there. Out at the Rose Bowl, UCLA leads number 24, Arizona State 42-23, about 6 minutes to go in the game there. Utah has just punched it in for the first time late in the first quarter. They lead Cal 7-0. Early first quarter, no score, Oregon and Washington State. Earlier finals today, number 1 Alabama beat Arkansas 48-7. Mac Jones, 3 touchdown passes in place of Tua Tagovailoa. Number 4, Clemson, no problem with Boston College, 59-7. Trevor Lawrence threw 3 touchdown passes. Travis Etienne had 3 touchdown runs. Number 3, Ohio State pulled away late from Wisconsin. Pulled away in the second half, really. Wisconsin cut a 10-0 lead to a 3-point deficit early in the third quarter, but it was all Buckeyes from there. They scored the last 28 points. Justin Fields threw a couple of touchdown passes. J.K. Dobbins, 163 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground for Ohio State. Biggest upset of the day, Kansas State beats number 5 Oklahoma 48-41. Wildcats built a 25-point lead in the fourth quarter. Oklahoma came all the way back to within a touchdown and had what appeared to be an onside kick recovered. However, they called him for illegal touching half a yard shy of the sticks, and Kansas State was able to kneel it out. Skylar Thompson for Kansas State, the quarterback, had four touchdown runs. Number six, Penn State, stays unbeaten. They go to 8-0 with a 28-7 win over Michigan State. Sean Clifford threw four touchdown passes for the Nittany Lions. TCU upsets number 15, Texas. I guess upset is really – this game went off at a picket, even though Texas is ranked 15th and TCU was coming off back-to-back losses. But the Horned Frogs win 37-27. Max Dugan had a touchdown run for TCU. Number 17, Minnesota stays unbeaten. They go to 8-0 with a 52-10 win over Maryland. Number 20, Iowa beat Northwestern 20-0. Appalachian State stays unbeaten. They go to 7-0 with a 30-3 win over South Alabama. Oklahoma State beat number 23 Iowa State 34-27. Hang with me here just a second here while I fix this. Don't you hate it when your scoreboard just crashes right in the middle of it? Okay, let me give you a couple more scores in progress. Memphis leads Tulsa 42-41, less than 2 minutes to go in that one. Colorado State and Fresno State tied at 31 midway through the fourth quarter. Kentucky leads Missouri 29-7 late in the fourth quarter. Louisiana Tech leads UTEP 42-13. That is early in the fourth quarter. Utah State and Air Force just underway. Same thing with San Diego State and UNLV. All right. Here's what happened in Lawrence, Kansas tonight. Texas Tech and Kansas are tied at 34, and there is a 40-yard field goal for Kansas to win the game. I'm guessing, Musso, somewhere around 8 seconds to go, something like that. All right. So Kansas goes to kick the 40-yard field goal with about 8 seconds to go, gets it blocked. Texas Tech, in returning the blocked field goal, goes to lateral it. Only problem is there ain't nobody to lateral it to. Ball's on the ground. Kansas recovers. How much time left, JV?
Not enough.
1 second. 32-yard field goal. Good.
That's amazing.
Kansas beats Texas Tech 37-34. That is just
old
so
Leslie.
That is so less that I have no other words. Miami beats Pitt 16-12. San Jose State. By the way, they've won a few games here and been competitive in others. They're better. They're better. San Jose State beats Army 34-29. Texas A&M beat Mississippi State 49-30. Kellen Mond threw three touchdown passes for the Aggies. Illinois beat Purdue 24-6. Rutgers beat Liberty 44-34. Western Michigan over Bowling Green 49-10. Southern Miss beat Rice 20-6. Wyoming over Nevada 31-3. It was UConn over UMass 56-35. Florida State beat Syracuse 35-17 to even their record at 4-4. Louisville beat Virginia 28-21. It was Stanford over Arizona 41-31. Indiana went into Nebraska and beat the Cornhuskers 38-31. Navy beat Tulane 41-38. It was Miami of Ohio over Kent State 23-16. South Florida beat East Carolina 45-20. Hawaii over New Mexico 45-31. North Carolina beat Duke 20-17. It was Tennessee over South Carolina 41-21. UCF beat Temple 63-21. Arkansas State over Texas State 38-14. And Georgia State beat Troy 52-33. And one more, if I could get down where I need to be on this scoreboard. Been a long day, friends and neighbors. All right, here it is. Alcorn beat Southern 27-13. Grambling beat Arkansas Pine Bluff 39-33. And that is your college football scoreboard. Game balls are next. Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day. Game balls. Game balls. Game balls. Presented by Baton Rouge Metro Airport. Baton Rouge Metro Airport. It's about time.
All right, game balls, you're up first. Who you got?
Ooh, Clyde Helaire.
Yeah, he had a good game. 26 carries, 136 yards, and a touchdown. Did one drive all by himself. He also caught seven passes for 51 yards. Offensively, I'm going with Ja'Marr Chase. You could pick Burrow pretty much every week, but I thought that Chase today was the one guy that had a number of big catches. I mean, he wasn't the only one, but some of the biggest plays where he looked like, hey, look, they knew what was coming. He still had a hard time handling him. So Ja'Marr Chase, 8 catches, 123 yards today with a long of 45. Who you got on defense?
Michael Divinity,
4 solos, 1 assist, including a sack on what was a beautiful loop stunt. Yeah, man,
no doubt.
He cut that corner exactly where he needed to, went through, put the quarterback on the ground, didn't get the penalty. It was a beautifully executed loop stunt for Divinity on that one. I'm going with Jacoby Stevens, led the team in tackles tonight with 10, 6 solos, and 4 assists. I almost went Jake. I really should probably said Jacob Phillips because he, with his 7 tackles, he also had a sack. And Stevens had a penalty, but I didn't really think that it was all that bad of a penalty. I think the penalty was really – they call it on Stevens, but I think it was on Stingley. So yeah. I kind of, you know – we talked enough about officiating tonight?
No, no, I'm
no, man. We did a little bit more. All right, LSU wins at 23-20. We're back to wrap it up. Eagle 98.1 game day.
Eagle 98.1 game day, presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
All right, winding up here. Astros well on their way to evening the World Series at 2 games apiece. They lead Washington 8-1 in the 7th inning. Grand slam for Alex Bregman. Mm. So the Astros looking to even things up there. All right, is on. 2 weeks. The countdown. We've had a little bit of everything, man, to this point in the season. LSU's won them all. They beat 3 teams in the top 10 that were ranked in the top 10 when they beat them. They've done it with style points. They've got the Heisman Trophy leader, if you want to call it that, going into this thing. They may not have the AP number one ranking tomorrow, but I'm as confident as I can be that they will have the CFP number one ranking when that comes out the week before LSU plays Alabama. So this is going to be 1 versus 2 in at least one poll, if not more than one poll. And even if it wasn't, even if they decided to put Ohio State in there somewhere, this will still be every bit as big a game as it was in 2011. And if you remember the countdown to that one, it was really, really something. All I can tell you for sure, JV, is that that game finished 9-6. This one won't.
No.
Okay. It won't finish 9-6.
That is true.
But it's a chance for LSU and Alabama. They've got a bye as well to recharge their batteries and get themselves locked into what is another epic game between these two teams. So, like I said, man, get in, get some rest next couple days, and here we go. It's LSU and Alabama. We've been pointing at it. A few snakes for the teams to jump over. They did that. 8-0 versus 8-0. What else can you say? Tonight, nothing. For the next 2 weeks, plenty. Looking forward to it. Final score once again, LSU 23 and Auburn 20. For Justin Vincent, for Musso, for Joe Rod, for Carl downstairs, and thanks to everybody for participating. This has been Eagle 98.1 Game Day.